Good morning, planet Earth. Good morning, little birdies, flying way up in the sky. Little birdies, we love you. Good morning to the squirrel, crawling around the tree, gathering nuts, gathering these nuts. Because it is August the 20th, 2026, and it's 9:23 a.m. here on the Olympic Peninsula. And did you know that the United States is $40 trillion in debt? Yes, we're $40 trillion in debt. That's 40 with a lot of zeros. That's a lot of money, isn't it? It's not going to be easy to pay back. But what if we had a bake sale? What if we put on a national bake sale? You could sell your Christmas cookies. You could sell your Aunt Margaret's fudge. A national bake sale. We could bake tasty things. We could bake anything. We could bake raccoon, a national bake sale. We invite the whole world. Come over France. Come over Germany. We're having a national bake sale. Try our pork rib sandwich. We could have a national bake sale. I think we could have every American that leaves the country carry chiclets. And you hand out these chiclets and you ask that they scan a QR code when you do. And then we charge maybe a penny a chiclet. That ain't much to charge for a little chiclet, is it? And we could even have pictures of gingerbread on it to sell our gingerbread chiclets to save America. We could sell chiclets and have a bake sale. We could have a car wash. We could auction off trips to space. Elon would do it. Auction off, have a big old space lottery. Where have I heard that before? Yes, Elon could auction trips to space. You know, the whole auction would be like, come on, you want to go to outer space? We'll take you up there, buddy. You might die. You might get really high. The radiation might cause your balls to drop off. But we could auction outer space. We could do what I talked about 9 fucking years ago. We could issue moon bonds, issue bonds for property. Property up on the moon, you can move in real soon. 200-year moon bonds, get like 1,000 acres, maybe 2,000 acres. You're gonna get ripped off, but a 200-year moon bond, your great, 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 great grandkids can open up your moon bond and redeem their moon land sometime in the year 21 or 22, whatever the fuck. But you'll have a moon bond that represents actual value of property on the moon. And you'll be a moon bond hero to your neighbors. They'll say, oh shit, we had to pay off the debt, but you bought a moon bond. It's only 40 trillion, people. Only 40 trillion. Yes, we have to sell a lot of chiclets. I don't doubt that. Now, people like Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of the Department of War and Defense and other types of frat bullshit. Yes, fraternity-level drunken bullshit. That's Pete Hegseth. He says we should just all eat some more ramen. I think also that one-eyed Cyclops motherfucker, ex-Navy whatever, SEAL Special Ops, he said eat some ramen too, didn't he, that fuck? Crenshaw? Eat your ramen, Dan. Oh, I'm way ahead of you, you fuck. But did you know $40 trillion buys a shit ton of ramen? Assume current prices, and you know, they're not quite 25 cents a ramen yet. Oh, I think they are. So assume like four per dollar. 40 trillion gets you 160 trillion ramen packets. Each packet weighs 3 ounces. That's about 30 trillion pounds of ramen, which is 15 billion tons of ramen, roughly the mass of the asteroid they think hit, you know, killed the dinosaurs. Do you think that Top Ramen would make that delivery if you offered them $40 trillion, but they had to deliver it in 2 weeks? Do you think they would take the deal? I'll give you $40 trillion, but in 2 weeks, you must deliver 15 billion tons of ramen, or you pay me $10 million. I mean, think about it. That's an awesome deal. In fact, we could just stare down China and say, you know what? We'll pay you back the money we owe you because we ain't deadbeats. We America, baby. But we would like to make a wager because you say you're so smart. We'll pay you $80 trillion on top of what we owe you if you can produce 15 billion tons of ramen in like 2 months. And I think China would take on that challenge. They'd breed hyper-intelligent, super-fantastic tardigrade amoeba types and breed them with bacteria and have tiny biofactories squeezing out ramen tendrils like flagellar mechanisms and weave these together using magnetic fields and other kinds of bullshit we can come up with when we don't have a better idea, you fuck. That's right, you fuck. $40 trillion, but folks, I don't think you've seen anything quite yet. When I was in high school, the thinkers, the folks at the top, you know, the various Brahmin and internals of the working system, maybe you'd call it the deep state or maybe the shadow state, but they weren't hidden. All the experts back in the 80s were thinking about how the United States was over $1 trillion in debt. And we were. We were over $1 trillion in debt. And that's how debt works, folks. It starts out like, well, whatever. I mean, we're so rich and we're making so much money. And then it gets to $5 trillion. And then you have the global war on terror. So you just jump, jump, jump. You get up to $10 trillion. And then you have Obama, who basically papered over a global depression, and you get to $20 trillion. And then you have Trump won and Biden won. And by the time you know it, within a relatively short period of time, you're at $40 trillion. But that's a shit ton of ramen. Next topic. That's a lot of ramen, folks. This article comes from Prospect Magazine, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to read parts of it. Actually, I may just read one part of it, but I'm going to go ahead and zoom it in a bit so I can read it. Yeah, anyways. I've talked about this issue before, and I'm not going to read the whole article. It's from Prospect. I have a link. It deals with that gentleman we've discussed, Herman Kahn. And before we get into that, let's talk about a few things. There's been some discussion, and I've mentioned it since this entire Iran thing has started. Again, I am very skeptical of this conflict at this point for a lot of really good reasons, to include the fact that it looks like the Iranians are cutting the Israelis a break, because any amount of time to rebuild and rearm is a break. And so when people come back and say, well, no, they're dealing with other stuff first, why? It's dumb. It's not smart. And if this is a deliberate strategic decision on the part of Iran to go into an attrition mode with the United States, understand this is a grifter war. And the United States doesn't care about its own citizens. How much do you think it cares about the citizens of Iran? Okay, it barely cares about us. Do you really think they care about any other people on the planet if they barely care about the American people? They care about the state of Israel, but you, Iran, stopped launching missiles at them like a few months ago for whatever reason. So I guess it's not just the United States looking out for Israel, it's Iran too. That's weird. Weird. But if we're playing pretend like this is a real conflict, then we'll revisit conversations we've had. One thing we've discussed, before we get into Herman Kahn and the specifics of nuclear conflict, one thing we've discussed on this podcast repeatedly is that towards the end of the Cold War, the people that wargamed conflict between the United States and the Soviet Union generally came to the conclusion that a conventional conflict would be a come-as-you-are war, which means that if you've got so many conventional missiles, so many jet fighters, so many tanks, so many rounds of ammo, the likelihood that you're going to easily resupply yourself is low. And that within a few months of high-intensity conflict, we're not talking about Gulf War I. We're not talking about shock and awe. We're not talking about picking on hobos and fighting hobos and paying a hobo $200 to punch them out. We're talking about first-class governments and states with militaries fighting each other. The conclusion they came to is that within about 90 days, either NATO, the Warsaw Pact, or both would be considering the use of tactical nuclear weapons. And then from there, the escalation can move rapidly. During the Cold War, people like Herman Kahn, and you can read about him, thought deeply on what nuclear war was because it was a new thing. And other than using two nukes on Japan, nobody had done it before, nobody's done it since, and nobody really understood if you could win or lose a nuclear war. Specifically, nobody really understood if there was something like limited nuclear war. Now, let's talk about a limited nuclear war scenario. Because in order to believe in the, we're going to use nukes on Iran, which again, given that we burned through our conventionals, could happen. Who knows? You think this is real. Folks, we don't have the military forces to invade Iran unless we have 2 to 3 years of buildup. That means that Iran has 2 to 3 years of buildup. That also means Russia, China, and anybody else that has an issue with us can pile on resources while we're building up. We simply don't have the military to invade conventionally. There is a play, I believe it was a play, but it came out as a movie around the year 2000, and I think it was called Deterrence. And the entire premise is very similar to what we're seeing today, except for in Deterrence, it's Iraq, not Iran. And the president, recognizing he has no conventional options, says, listen, Iraq, either you move your forces out of Saudi Arabia, or we're going to nuke Baghdad. Now, of course, this is not Iraq, this is Iran. But the film Deterrence kind of, if you believe in predictive programming, kind of deals with this scenario. So again, I'm asking you to pretend for a moment that the conflict is real, to understand that maybe we have accurate information about what capabilities exist. We could have a secret space force that has hyper lasers. We could have who knows what. I don't know, you don't know. But what we're told right now is that more or less shot the wad with respect to defensive missiles and offensive conventional missiles and bombs. More or less. We've used up a lot, okay? A movie came out in the 1960s called Failsafe. I think it came out in 64. I think it came out roughly the same year as Dr. Strangelove. And they're very different films, but they both deal with accidental nuclear war. In the case of Failsafe, the United States accidentally triggers a bomber to go past its failsafe point and to drop a bomb on Moscow. And they try to stop it. They do everything they can to stop it. Walter Matthau plays a character in Failsafe that is sort of modeled on those Herman Kahn types that would hang around cocktail parties in the 50s and 60s and talk about nuclear war like it's playing football. But ultimately in the film Failsafe, they came to the conclusion that the only thing you could do is if you couldn't shoot down the bomber and you couldn't stop it from destroying Moscow, all you really could do is make an offer to the Soviet Union saying, listen, quid pro quo, we destroyed one of your cities. If we destroy one of our own cities with a bomb, will you accept that as the end of hostilities? And again, I could imagine a scenario where the Russians would come back because we're not, the Soviet Union no longer exists. The Russians might come back or the Chinese might come back in a similar scenario and say, well, okay, but, we're going to drop the bomb. We're going to launch the missile. Who knows? And I'm sorry for taking a pause on this, but this is not a joke, folks. If you really believe this is real, you're talking about moms and dads and families. These are not abstractions or monsters. If we use nuclear weapons in whatever form, this is a serious issue. Now, what I just described is an example of limited nuclear war. It's accidental, but it is limited, which means in an accidental scenario, the parties could come to an agreement that they would both suffer equal casualties. What about a limited nuclear war that isn't accidental? And this is where we're talking about Iran. If we used nuclear weapons, in my humble opinion, on targets in Iran, and that's assuming we avoid Tehran, because if we use weapons on Tehran, even tactical nukes, that's really bad. That potentially puts us in a scenario where Russia and China have to ask themselves a question that we asked during the Cold War with certain war games called, the Madman and the Kremlin. But Russia and China have to ask the question at this point, are these people batshit crazy? And I just don't mean Trump. People love to put all this on Trump, and maybe he does have ultimate power. Maybe you believe he has ultimate power. I think he's a calm as smoke. But whoever is pulling the strings, the people on the outside of the box could come to the reasonable conclusion that the people pulling the strings are crazy. And so it's similar to the same scenario. Are there crazy people in Washington, D.C.? So let's say we just use tactical nukes, and we're talking about latest generation. And folks, there are people who've studied this who will tell you that some of these missile cities and some of these factories and some of these strategic locations are so deep under so much granite that we simply don't have the nukes to get to them. And we could, you could argue, look at NORAD. NORAD is designed for some fairly heavy hits. I mean, I think in the multi-megaton range. And even with those types of weapons, NORAD has a survival likelihood. These other bunkers in Iran are very similar. So we don't really know. We do not know if a nuclear weapon would do anything. But let's make the assumption that we have fourth generation nukes that can penetrate that deep. And folks, when I say fourth generation nukes, I'm talking about things that are close to being like neutron bombs or even X-ray or gamma ray lasers, which means that as part of the stage of being a nuclear weapon, really the final stage, high energy particles get magnified, directed, whatever. And so we might have nuclear weapons that could penetrate that deep and kill every living thing in the bunker, even if the bunker itself is still intact. We might have nukes like that. If we do, then yes, we could theoretically take out these locations. We'd have to know where they are, and we'd have to use our magical nukes I just described. So let's say for the sake of argument that we had the magical nukes, and we knew where to target them, and we did it. We did it. We targeted the 20 or 30 locations. They were surgical. Each hit was roughly the equivalent of a 5-kiloton conventional nuclear warhead. Yeah, there's fallout. Yeah, the locals are kind of getting poisoned. Yes, the groundwater is likely going to be poisonous for the next, 6,000 years. But we took out all these locations with nukes. Then what? Because the Iranians have a decision. Do we continue or not? And folks, if we could take out these cities, then we have, in fact, turned the table. I'm not saying we can, because this is a whole new level if we decide to use nukes. But let's play pretend. Let's say we use nukes and they're effective. Then the Iranians have a question. Do we continue the conflict, or do we, sue for peace, whatever peace we can find? The Russians and the Chinese have a question. Because, folks, this is not a new story. If you're looking at it from Putin's perspective or Xi's perspective, you just have to think of good old Colonel Gaddafi. After 9/11, Gaddafi actually worked with the U.S. State Department and the U.S. military. Did you know that? Did you know he worked with us? Did you know he voluntarily shut down his nuclear program for making weapons? Did y'all know that? I mean, it's something to think about. I'm not saying he was a good guy. I think they all suck. But the fact is, Gaddafi was not a raging enemy of the United States when we took him out. When Obama and the Clinton administration decided back in 2011 to basically trigger a monetary crisis and at the same time raise the price of food all across North Africa. Baba doom, you have instability. And then let's topple Gaddafi, because he wants to sell oil for gold. This movie's been on TV, whether it's Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein or anyone. We've seen the TV show. It doesn't matter if Trump's president, doesn't matter if Biden's president. Syria fell under Biden, folks, not under Trump, okay? All of these characters, sometimes they live. I mean, I think Assad, from Syria, is still alive in Moscow. I wouldn't recommend he ever go back to Syria because of what's been going on. But folks, this is not a new story. So how do Putin and Xi respond if you think they're independent actors? And folks, I don't believe it. I don't believe the Iran narrative. We're going to talk about that next. But let's say we believe the narrative. What do they do? We just used nukes. Let's say we used a half a dozen tactical nukes on Iran. And folks, Iran is a big place. It is mostly mountains and deserts. A half a dozen tactical nukes is conservative. That is conservative. That is a limited nuclear war against the first-class conventional state. Let's say we used 12 of them, and they were each around 5 to 10 kilotons, and they were advanced enough, and they worked. What do Russia and China do? Well, rationally, if assume that they behave better than we do, I think Russia basically takes the gloves off, assuming Putin is an independent actor, and he goes to the European nations and says, if you do not stop supporting the Ukraine, we will start targeting the supply chain that provides all the drones. And I don't mean hitting the explosive plants. That massive explosion, I think, in Italy a week or so ago, a few days ago, I'm not talking about explosives. I'm talking about fabrication. I'm talking about computer scientists. I'm talking about, if Mossad and the CIA go after nuclear scientists in Iran, guess what? If you're a computer scientist who designs weapons chips, you're a target too. So is your CPU manufacturing. So are the places you make the micro resistors. And folks, it's not a long list. Okay? It's not a huge number of places that actually provide the basic electronics for this stuff, to include the satellite networks themselves. I think Putin and the Russians go to the Europeans and say, this can get a lot worse for everyone before the winter comes. Or let's try to come up with a peace agreement. I think that would be Russia's logical play, because at that point, all bets are off. I don't think the Europeans, for the most part, most of these governments would stay in power if they supported the use of nuclear weapons against Iran. And that's the scenario we're talking about, right? I think China, also, the most rational move would be basically use this to their advantage. And the best thing they could do is what I call the soft takeover. You know, you don't invade Taiwan. You don't launch a bunch of missiles at Taiwan. You sit down and have a conversation with Taiwan. And then you come up with a way to do with the Taiwan situation what the Chinese navigated reasonably well with Hong Kong. And that is come up with a power sharing relationship, give them some kind of autonomy. Ask, in fact, maybe even just ask for a mutual defense pact. As crazy as that sounds, say, listen, you can't depend on America. Okay, worst case scenario, you're going to be a radioactive wasteland. We care about you. So you don't have to be like us, and we don't have to be like you, but what about a mutual defense pact? And as crazy as that sounds, folks, I think the people of Taiwan, they're not the Chiang Kai-shek followers of 40, 50 years ago. These are newer people. And yes, I'm not sure they love China, but if China said you can have your system, you just have to be strategically aligned with us, I think the Taiwan people go with China. I think the government goes with China. I think the same thing happens potentially with Japan at this point, especially how we're continually using Japan as our monetary wood chipper, which doesn't help the Japanese economy, and in reality doesn't help ordinary Americans, but it does help the super rich. The yen carry trade is a thing going back decades, and they continue to play the same game, just different versions of it, but it's more or less the same game. Let's squeeze out of the Japanese yen everything we can. So the most rational set of plays for the players involved don't necessarily involve World War III the way we would understand it. But I do think it does involve both Russia and China cleaning up the table a bit in their favor. And I think the Ukraine war ends pretty fast. In fact, if Russia really wanted to be spectacular, maybe they use a tactical nuke. I would use it probably on Zelensky and his comrades. I would definitely try to target it, but maybe they do. You never know. It's one of those situations where the threat might be more powerful than the reality. But here's the thing. If all of that were to unfold perfectly, the situation for the United States is plain terrible. It's not great. Economically, the dollar is dead at that point as a reserve currency. People are going to be selling bonds. And our own government might start to fall apart if, in fact, we launch nukes and then we ended up with a situation where we did not totally defeat Iran. The Strait of Hormuz is still closed, folks, in this scenario, because I don't think we can really tell what Iran would do. Even if we think they would sue for peace, I think the Russians and the Chinese would backstop them. And this would become an international event in terms of a human rights crisis. So it's entirely possible that the Iranians invite in the Russians and the Chinese to help them amidst the crisis created by who? The United States. But what if the Russians and the Chinese apply to us the same model we wargamed during the Cold War? And instead of it being madman in the Kremlin, it's madman on the Potomac. And they believe truly that either Trump or whoever controls him, that we've gone off our rails, that even if there is a plan, a strategy from our perspective, it is hidden to them. And from their perspective, playing the game, we are irrational. We have discussed this before, folks, so many times. There is a dark side to mutually assured destruction, and it's really quite simple. Mutually assured destruction is based on two-person game theory. Game theory only works if you assume the players are rational, which means doesn't mean they're good. Okay, you don't have to play this game against good people, but you do have to play it against rational people. Otherwise, the outcomes are completely unpredictable. The dark side of mutually assured destruction is the madman in the Kremlin, or madman or madwoman on the Potomac. And that is, you're dealing with a government that is not looking out for its own best interests. That the government itself, on a certain level, rationally, could be seen as threatening the life, the survival, the wealth of its own people. In that scenario, you can't really apply mutually assured destruction because the people at the top don't care. They don't care. If every city in America gets nuked, they don't care. That is the dark side of MAD. And another scenario for Russia and China is to look at the picture and say, listen, we can wait and wait and wait, and we can placate, and we can help an empire slowly dissolve itself. The problem is this empire doesn't look like it's going to implode. The empire looks like it's going to explode. Okay, imploding empires would be like the Soviet Union in the 90s. Exploding empires, there aren't that many good examples, but I suppose you could say the Ottoman Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, empires that explode. I would say the Spanish Empire produced a lot of war, not just the Spanish-American War. That was towards the end. The implosion of the Spanish Empire in the Western Hemisphere created revolutions and warfare for a couple hundred years. And some could argue it's ongoing, you know, at least as far as the class system works in different Latin American countries, but that's a separate topic. And I don't want to oversimplify. It's not always the case that empires only implode or explode. But implosion tends to be more peaceful. It tends to be more about things just sort of just splitting apart in a way and a peaceful agreement to end the marriage, so to speak. Russia and China, and I don't want to belabor the point and get a bit too confusing here, but Russia and China would have a choice if we use nukes on Iran. Do they take what they can on the table as players, rationally do the things they can do, which is what we just discussed, Russia shoring up its position against Ukraine and probably ending the war in its favor, and China coming up with a soft takeover of Taiwan. Okay, but what if they look at the board and say, United States is batshit crazy. The United States, whoever runs it, has been batshit crazy since 9/11. And if they're looking out for anyone's interests, it's not in the United States. So we could launch bombs at the United States and they wouldn't really care because that's not where the interests are. Folks, I would ask you, what country has not been hit by Iranian ballistic missiles since roughly the end of, middle of April? And that country is the same country that started the war. So it's a little bit weird all the way around right now. Exactly who do you hit if you want to punish the U.S.? Because the people running our government, it's not the American people. I'm sorry. So functionally, we are irrational right now. Our needs, wants, and desires are all schizophrenic. Doesn't mean the people at the top are actually crazy. It just means from the perspective of an enemy, we look batshit crazy. And in scenarios like that, mutually assured destruction breaks down. And what you're left with are a bunch of options, none of which are good. In fact, it's similar to the situation with Iran right now. We don't have any good military options. Assuming a person thought we should attack Iran in the first place, we don't have a conventional option, according to what we've been told. We don't have super weapons, from what we've been told. Maybe the super weapons will show up, but they haven't yet. What we got left are nukes. And I just don't know, folks. In the situation between the United States and Russia and China, I think Russia and China have a 50-50. They either clean up the board in their favor, or they immediately wage a decapitation strike, limited nuclear war against the United States and probably a country in the Middle East, or at least it's such a small little postage stamp to use probably smaller weapons. But their options are limited, which is to eliminate the crazy person. That is ultimately the option. Now, people would say, well, you could send in special forces. But can you? If the crazy person on the Potomac isn't just a person, but it's an entity, it's an institution, how do you send in special forces from Russia or China to take out the entire U.S. deep state? It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Now, we've been playing this game, folks, because we want to play pretend like this whole thing is real. And folks, there's a lot about this conflict that does not add up at this point. I want to just go through some questions really quick if we haven't addressed them. Do we have nukes that, yeah, we talked about that. Who knows if we have nukes that can even do this? I've been told we don't. The other thing I've thought about in recent years is that we may not have, and this is, again, this is a supposition, this is a conjecture, but I wonder if we've really properly refitted a single thermonuclear weapon in the last 20 or 30 years, which means that a lot of our nuclear deterrent might not be what we think it is. But that's a separate topic. The question is, do we have nukes that we could use against Iran that would be effective? And I don't know. Probably most of the people you don't know either. Do we know where these sites are? All the missile sites, all the nuke sites in Iran? It looks like maybe we know where some of them are. Perhaps we know where most of them are. Do we use nukes on Tehran? So that's a good thing to leave. Folks, if all we did was use nukes on military targets outside of Tehran, I think Russia and China have the option of saying, okay, this is American bullshit, but we'll clean up the board in our favor and we'll move on. But what if we did use nukes, even tactical nukes, on command and control in Tehran itself? Tens of millions of people live in Tehran. Any use of nuclear weapons would kill a lot of people. Even tactical nukes would probably kill tens of thousands of people. And in that scenario, it's not like the Chinese and the Russians say, well, okay, whatever. In that scenario, I'm not sure they have a choice. Because if we're using nukes on the capital of another country, then why wouldn't we use nukes on Moscow? I mean, we've been moving our missile capacity and capability at a conventional scale closer and closer to Moscow since 1989. Okay, it's not recent. It didn't just happen under Obama. It's been going on since the first Bush administration. And every single administration, our conventional weapons get closer and closer. Our fighters, our bombers get closer and closer. And it's not that hard to figure out that you could equip a fighter with a nuclear weapon as well, or equip a missile system with a nuclear weapon. Our ability to send nukes into Russia is getting so close that if we deployed, let's say, hypersonic tactical nukes to Poland, that would be a pretext for a crisis. And again, we don't have that tech there yet. But imagine we deployed a 30-second missile to Poland. In 30 seconds, we could hit any target in Russia. Imagine what that would do to the equation. All of a sudden, Putin has to say to himself, do they intend to simply wipe us out, period? So if, in fact, we use nukes on Tehran, along with military targets, I think the Chinese and the Russians don't have a choice. What is the world's response? Like, let's get outside the box of China, Russia, the US, and pretend it's the whole planet. I think most of the planet, even the crooked governments that run most of the planet, are simply trying to get by. I mean, I'm not a fan of any of the governments on the planet right now. They're all kind of terrible in different ways. But if you just thought in terms of the second and third tier societies, they've got their own problems. They've got their own issues. It, you know, you could argue that war could take people's minds off of it, but really, not a nuclear war. All that's going to do is grind their lives down more. It guarantees a worldwide famine if there's a nuclear war. It does. It just guarantees that that's going to happen. Because even if we somehow defeated the Iranians in whatever Pyrrhic victory that would be, it's hard to believe the Strait of Hormuz would not end up a disaster area. So we would already be at a deficit. Who knows the impact of the fallout from a limited nuclear war? We don't know. Impact to the ozone layer? We don't know. You could say, well, these are penetration weapons, Dan. That's true. If these are true penetrators, then perhaps most of the nuclear effect happens underground. What happens to that groundwater? What happens to, yeah. There's a lot we don't know. I don't think the world responds kindly to people conveniently and easily using nuclear weapons over the issues that have been proposed as the issues in this case. And it does seem hypocritical and ironic if the United States uses nukes against Iran because Iran threatens, you know, they believe Iran is threatening to have a nuclear weapon since like 1987, you know, or earlier, really. And one more thing before we go to the next subject, which I hope sort of undermines what we just discussed in a way. Is the use of nukes a war crime? And I think at this point, the concept of a war crime is at best kind of abstract and at worst sort of Kafkaesque. I don't know that the world cares as much about war crimes as we think it does, as far as the governments go. Ordinary people might get obsessed with it, but the government seem wholly intent to commit war crimes and then say I'm sorry a decade or two later. So what is the meaning of a war crime if in fact it doesn't appear making these things war crimes acts as any type of preventative measure, as a deterrent? They keep committing these war crimes. They keep massacring civilians. So is nukes a war crime? Well, listen, nobody knows the real number, but let's say the Israelis have dumped between 100,000 and 500,000, let's call it 300,000 tons of TNT on Gaza since 10/7. 100 to 300,000. Let's call it 200. Is that the same as using using 10, 20 kiloton nuclear weapons? And I couldn't tell you. I mean, I know enough about the subject to tell you the nuclear effects are bad beyond the scope of the explosion. But these conventional weapons are also causing damage. And whenever you hear a hospital got hit by a 2,000-pound bomb, understand, hospitals have oncology wings. Oncology wings have radiology labs. Radiology labs have highly radioactive materials. So if that 2,000-pound bomb is what I think it is, and not precise and surgical, because it's not, then you could, you know, spread a crap ton of radioactive material all over Gaza. Are they even checking for this? Do they even care? Is using nukes a war crime if using conventional weapons, especially thermobaric weapons, can have almost the same effects on a limited scale? Does that make the use of thermobaric weapons a war crime? Brothers and sisters, I think we're beyond that. It's too bad, maybe, that we're beyond it. We have to throw that naive desire out the window that somehow the better angels will blah, blah, blah. But no, they're not. In fact, probably the best thing working in our favor with respect to the use of nukes in Iran is the next subject. I have some links to this, but I'd like to quote Paul Craig Roberts before we continue. If you agree to a ceasefire before you finish off the enemy, the war is not over. And again, you can listen to the interview. It comes from Dialogue Works. He's kind of an edgelord. I don't really trust a lot of these folks on YouTube. And Paul Craig Roberts is getting old enough that even if he is telling the truth, he's kind of the smart choice as far as edgelords go, because he sounds old enough that people can just discount it. Oh, he's just an old Craigy, whatever. But the quote itself is important, folks. Paul Craig Roberts emphasizes this, that the Iranian government had the Israeli government, you know, on the ropes, as they say in boxing. At the end of March, early April of this year, the Israeli government was close to collapse, and their military was close to collapse. And then all of a sudden, the Iranians decide on the ceasefires and the MOUs, and the Israelis continue to commit atrocities in Gaza. They continue to commit atrocities in the West Bank. They continue to commit atrocities, period. We don't need to do the laundry list. So the axis of resistance is continually being hit by the Israelis. And yet for some reason, a few months ago, the Iranians decided to stop using their missiles and drones on Israel proper. If you don't think this is weird, folks, I think you haven't been keeping up, okay? But at least Paul Craig Roberts points out how weird this is. Now you have Trump threatening to bomb Oman because Oman is working with Iran for one of these passages through the Strait of Hormuz. Maybe he bombs Oman, but like I said, my friends, a lot of this is theatrical enough that I'm not really sure how seriously we should take it yet. Is there an actual situation in the Strait of Hormuz preventing the flow of oil? Probably, because that's a level of control in terms of a PSYOP that I'm not really sure is feasible. So is there an incoming shortage? Probably. If they're telling you a diesel shortage is coming, for example, you should probably listen at this point. But at the same time, it could also be bullshit, okay? Here's a quote from Scott Ritter. Scott Ritter is an edgelord, former Marine intelligence guy who's worked on disarmament projects, whatever, for the various organizations. Here's a quote from Scott Ritter. Get rid of the most destabilizing influence in the Middle East, the United States. Now, this is a quote when he was talking about what Iran needs to do. And again, for weeks and weeks, well, not weeks, but for the first month of this war, people like Scott were talking about Israel all the time. If you've been listening to these guys, they barely mention Israel at all. And all the last couple weeks, I think it's weird. As a Sovietologist, I would tell you to be suspect. But in the specific quote, he doesn't say the state of Israel. He says the United States. Brothers and sisters, I think that this is another example of where these narrative setters have been told to change the discourse. They've been told explicitly, stop talking about Israel, stop making it look like Israel's going to collapse, start focusing on Iran and the USA. And if you have to beat up on somebody, beat up on the USA. And that tells you that these are edgelords and that they're probably edgelords that, well, work in coordination with somebody else, I'm sorry, or at least are being influenced by somebody else. I think that Colonel McGregor guy still kind of tries to, you know, throw a punch at Israel once in a while, but for the most part, they're just staying mum, and they're definitely not talking about the elephant in the room that at least Paul Craig Roberts had the courage to mention. Why the fuck hasn't Iran launched a single fucking drone attack or missile attack on Israel proper since essentially the first week of April? It's weird. So to counterbalance our conversation about nuclear war, I would ask you to entertain the possibility that whatever the Iran conflict is, we don't really know. Okay? We don't know. We think we know, but we don't. And it could be real. Who knows? It could also be this year's COVID, you know, if you know, you know, right? Next topic. Is there something in prophecy? I'm not going to look it up. I should have looked it up, but I'm sure one of you could look it up. Maybe it's not in prophecy. Maybe it's in fiction inspired by prophecy, like you know, the poet Yeats' Second Coming. But is there something in prophecy about towards the end of time? Especially as the priest reads his little, you know, little funerary ritual. Is there something that pops up near the gravesite when you're there at the funeral where the priest says, until the sea gives up its dead? Like the ocean giving up its dead, the sea giving up its dead. Now, I want you to think about Lake Mead. Good old Lake Mead. 1960s, Lake Mead. Mafia, you got Lucky Luciano and all kinds of freaks, you know, you got the Hangouts and the Kriegos, you got the East Coast, West Coast, and you got, you know, Goodfellas getting in trouble with the Joe Pesci types, and then they got to take a trip on a boat, you know, just like Fredo. Yes, just like Fredo, they take a little boat trip, and oh boy, yeah. Like, they think they found this Pappas guy. This Pappas guy was a mafia guy, and he disappeared, I think, almost exactly 50 years ago. And they think they found his bones as the water has dried out, as the sea has receded, as Lake Mead gives up its dead. Thank you. think about what prophecy deals with. And I'm not saying this is related to prophecy, folks. I'm kind of joking there. But think about how prophecy deals with things in terms of capsizing. Not really gradual, not really linear. Today things are normal, tomorrow there's going to be a flood. And a lot of prophecy tends to be discontinuous like that. So essentially, if you read something about the sea giving up its dead, it's hard to know what that means exactly. But there is something prophetic. Because when you think about Vegas, what is Vegas? Vegas is a place where if you go to Vegas, it stays in Vegas. And folks, like Johnny Pappas or whatever his name was, he probably, yeah, he found out, didn't he? If it happens in Vegas, it stays in, well, Lake Mead. Yeah. Lake Mead. Anyways, I have a link to a news report you can listen to or look at. It's interesting. I don't want to tell you about it. So it turns out there's some fraternity in Pennsylvania that's been caught trafficking cocaine. And it seems like a cliche because it is a cliche. I'm not going to read the link. I'm not going to read the news. You can look at it yourself. But I don't know. The whole thing looks ridiculous. And again, it could be 100% true. Like, do I think there are fraternities in the U.S. that traffic cocaine and drugs? Do I think there are sororities that traffic cocaine and drugs? Do I think that there are fraternities and sororities in the Greek system that traffic drugs and people and guns? And the answer is yes. Okay. Maybe there was a day and age where fraternities and sororities were these really cool places where young men and women, blah, blah, blah. But I've experienced enough of this stuff going back a few decades to tell you. These are greasy places, and it is about the quote-unquote the family, in that sense, kind of like the mafia. And like the mafia, I have no doubt that there are these surreptitious, strange types of things happening amongst your fraternity boys, okay? And what do you do about it? You can't do nothing about it, so let's move on. Let's move on. You know, we got to get ready in the nuclear whatever, right? Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. What if we are fragments of imaginary conversations? What if we are bits and pieces of moments of deep thought? What if we are atoms of intellectual accident that happen in an alien being while he's working on his exercise machine? Yeah. I don't want to spend time on this really because we've brought up simulation theory off and on, and I've said this and I'll say it again. If I lost my faith in God, I think I would end up at simulation theory because a lot of this is just too weird. Too weird, too strange. It doesn't really add up. So, you know, if I didn't believe in God, I doesn't mean I would believe in the God of science, because for the most part, the God of science and technology has kind of failed in my lifetime. The promises it has made have been terrible. And the outcomes have been very different in many ways, unless you were attracted to dystopian lore, you know, as a young person, as I was. For the most part, the popular mechanics version of the future never happened. And that doesn't mean everything is crap. But sometimes I do wonder, I entertain the possibility that this is more synthetic and more absurd than even a belief in the supernatural. And that is that it really is just the desiderata, the leftover layer, the residue of some type of consciousness. It may be biological, it may be machine, and it might not even matter, because as particles, as atoms, as fragments of an imaginary conversation, what the fuck do we think we're going to figure out? And what do we even think we know? If this were a simulation, does that really make a fucking difference? And the answer is, who the fuck knows? Maybe if we have a national bake sale, though, you know, here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. What are you doing? What are you doing? Innocent people aren't doing stuff. So why are you, buddy? Why are you doing stuff? What are you doing? What are you doing? And I know that's silly. It's kind of related to that flock camera thing. But folks, this has been going on for decades, and I think your smart device is more of your enemy than most of you realize. But yeah, this is not new. And it's gotten to the point that the ethos that surrounds it is, what are you doing? People who are innocent aren't doing stuff. They're not out walking around the sidewalk. Did you pay your sidewalk fee? Oh, you didn't pay your sidewalk fee. Well, you don't get to walk on this. Oh, did you pay your fee to put up a leaflet? Oh, well, your free speech doesn't work anymore. Go fuck yourself. Did you pay your fee to just hang out on the corner there? Oh, you see where you put in your chip, or you wipe your, you swipe your hand after you wipe your ass? That's where you pay your fee to sit at the bench, you craphead. What are you doing? Innocent folks aren't doing stuff. They're not out talking or posting leaflets or protesting or training with a weapon. What are you doing? Innocent people are at home, plugged in on, you know, X or Facebook or Instagram, Insta, as the kids say. TikTok, you fuck. Innocent people are on TikTok, shithead. Yes, what are you doing, you fuck, outside gardening, outside walking your dog? What are you doing outside feeding the homeless? You should be at home on TikTok threatening your kids because you got postpartum, right? Yeah, what are you doing? I've got some links to some posters about what are you doing. It's 2 per color printed page. Whatever. I don't really ask about this anymore because my 5 fed friends don't want to use the color printer at work. I wonder why. World War... Let's look at this. This article comes from TMZ.com. Before I read it, I'm going to drink some coffee. This article comes from TMZ.com. Headline, Grand Theft Auto 6, Uncle Sam wants gamers to re-enlist. This is by the TMZ staff, and it was published on August the 19th, 2026. The U.S. Army is preparing to invade Vice City, apparently, promising soldiers who re-enlist multiple days off to play Grand Theft Auto 6. The Army's 3rd Infantry Division, based out of Fort Stewart, Georgia, has offered current active duty service members a 4-day pass to steal, kill, and run from the cops in the game after it comes out on November the 19th, but there's a catch. Soldiers only get the time off to play the video game if they agree to track on at least 2 years to their service contracts. Okay, that sounds like a bad deal, folks, if you're in the service. According to U.S. Army spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel Angel Tomko, a new career counselor working for the unit suggested the program, which was implemented because the service branch is trying to use incentives, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to stop right here. You can come up with whatever Hanlon's reason you want. You can come up with excuses. I don't care what excuses you want to come up with. 25, 30 years ago, the DoD was looking at games, online games, as a way to surreptitiously train people, to get people ready. Now, this particular story doesn't really shock me because when I really think about it, if you understood where these troops are going to deploy, and I don't think it's Iran, I don't think it's the Ukraine, I don't think it's Taiwan. I think the Department of War that has wargamed this knows the most likely place they will deploy 2 troops in the next year or so. And when you think about it, Grand Theft Auto 6 is at worst, probably pretty decent, you know, tactical mindset training. And at best, it works to dehumanize the target class, which means that if you believe the U.S. military is going to be used to quell disorder in the United States against American citizens, then why not let them play Grand Theft? Why not promote it? Why not have them playing as much Grand Theft Auto as they can? Because the great thing about that game is it dehumanizes. Okay, it's a hooker. It's a gangbanger. It's some random truck. If you shred some crazy guy in a car with a 50 cal, it's no big deal. These are just all criminals, because what are they doing out? What are they doing stuff? Where are you going with the cash in your pocket? And the question you should be asking is, how did the United States of America end up here? Yeah, how did we end up here, folks? So, I've eschewed talking about donating to my podcast for a couple of years, other than once in a while, and I even deleted my PayPal link a month or so ago, theatrically, and I'm sorry. I have a new PayPal link. It is the same ID I use for my t-shirts. That's Gingerbread. G1NJRBR3D. Gingerbread. Anyways, I have a link in the notes to the PayPal. If you want to donate, you can, but I would suggest at this point that if you don't have the money, you focus on basically yourself and the people you care about. I don't want to give a long speech. I'd love it if somebody could donate, but the soft sell is still bullshit. And like I said, folks, I don't know anybody with extra money right now. And if there are people like that, they don't listen to my podcast. They don't listen to me. Again, I don't really care. I mean, you can give any reason. Well, it's because you suck, Dan. I could. I could really suck. It doesn't matter. I mean, there's so many people out there that suck pretty bad, and it seems to me suck worse than I do, but yet they seem to have a million people listening to them, supposedly. So whether I suck or not is really not the issue. You probably don't have any money, and I would say, well, what about my new listeners? Who are they? They don't have any money either. But if you have some extra money and you want to do something foolish with your extra money, after you've taken care of your food, water, shelter, and the people you care about, and your pets, and you've protected yourself as much as you rationally can, given the bad information you're exposed to every single day, if you want to do something foolish with your money, you feel free to donate to my podcast. Have a great rest of your day.